From the Professional Disc Golf Association, this is PDGA Radio News.
Disc golf is not always pretty, but it is generally entertaining, and I think that is probably the best way to recap the Disc Golf Pro Tour Championship that took place this weekend in Florida. That's what we're going to be talking about most of the time today on PDGA Radio. I'm Steve Hill, and I'm joined by Sarah Lamerson. Sarah, man, this season like went by in a blink, I feel like, but also feels like it was incredibly long, and I think this weekend was a nice capper. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Yeah, you're right. The time is going by very quickly, but my goal next year is to start playing events earlier. I didn't start till May this year, so my season was relatively short.
Yeah. That's I know there's people who are going to play all the way through the winter. So we're talking about like the end of the quote unquote season, but for like the hardcore travelers and players and road warriors, the season doesn't really end. So we'll have to figure out where to proceed with our shows. But before we get into the Pro Tour Championship too much, a couple of quick announcements. Obviously, membership season for the PGA is open. If you join now, you're good up to the end of 2019, which means you get some free weeks in there if you take advantage now. So you can go to pdga.com/join and take care of that. We also, hello, Jeff and the Drums on Instagram. You need to claim your prize for our PDGA Radio September win. Hit us up at radio@pdga.com or send us a DM on Instagram and we will take care of you. And lastly, holy cow, Sarah, we're talking about this season coming to an end. Next season is already getting underway. The Las Vegas Challenge, the first NT event, registration is already open. All the way down to 970 in MPO and 825 in FPO for ratings.
Wow.
So be sure to go hit that up. There's a link at the PDGA website in the announcement section right now, because actually we're like 4 months away from Vegas.
I know.
It's crazy.
It's not that far away at all. It's crazy.
It's not, but we have plenty to talk about. Disc Golf Pro Tour Championships. We have Chris Dickerson taking it down on the MPO side. Sarah Hokum taking down the FPO side. Sarah Lamberson getting both picks.
Yes.
Very nicely done.
Thank you. I think you
obliterated me in the picks this season. And this one I can't even get mad at. Like this, like you got me on some like, all right, like I'm gonna take like the chalk picks, but like Dickerson and Hokum definitely were not the top rated players going in. So
I mean, I've been picking Dickerson all year.
You have. And we're gonna be joined by both of them on the show. Sarah and I had a chance to talk to Chris, and then I talked to Sarah, and It's gonna be good. You'll get to hear from them in a little bit, but let's talk about all the stuff from the championship this weekend. It took place out in Florida, the New World Disc Golf Center out in Jacksonville, and I don't know. Let's talk on the MPO side a little bit first, because that was really like there was some goofy stuff going on. That's where I kind of led in the show with disc golf not always being pretty. It was very pretty for the first few rounds. Chris Dickerson went 10 down, 10 down, 13 down.
Course record.
Yeah. All the way from the qualifying day. So he started out in the qualifier because he hadn't played that many Pro Tour events. So pretty impressive that he came from the qualifying round to win the whole thing. But then he wins it with a 4 down in the final, which, and this is no knock on Chris, but I mean, everybody, it was a pretty sloppy final round. The wind really kicked up. Lots of OBs, lots of mistakes, lots of like watching it and getting the vibe of kind of like, man, does anyone really want to win this thing? Because it was, I mean, that's kind of how it was.
No one could get anything going.
Yeah. And so it was final round. You had Dickerson, Kevin Jones, Nicola Castro, Nate Sexton, and Ricky Wasaki all in the same card. And like, there were crazy lead changes. I saw Ulti World Disc Golf put out like a GIF of the different lead changes on the UDisc leaderboard, and it was kind of nutty. But it was like people would kind of get some momentum, and then as soon as they had the momentum, just whoop, it was gone. They would like throw OB or something like that. Sexton, I talked to him real quick last night, and he even knew it. He was like, what was the, you know, what were people saying on the chat board? and it was kind of like, yeah, that was a lot of it. It was like, does anyone really want to win this thing? And ultimately, Chris Dickerson did win. There, it wasn't without a little controversy at the end, which we will talk about. I think we'll save that for maybe we'll save that for a couple more minutes from now. But ultimately, biggest win in of Chris Dickerson's career, I would say, Sarah. I don't know
I
if
would
he
say so,
I would
yeah.
imagine he would say that as well. Biggest payday of his career at
Definitely.
$7,500. Biggest payday of Sarah Hokum's career at $2,500. Which kind of crazy because she's been playing for a lot longer than Chris Dickerson.
Yeah.
But congratulations to both of them. This championship is, I think it's really fun because the format is so different. It really yielded some big surprises. With Dickerson coming from the qualifier round, that's Thursday. You had a couple other big surprises on Thursday. Joel Freeman tied Dickerson for the hot round. Anthony Barella also. You had a guy like Reed Frascura getting in, and then a few people, like big name people, not making it out of Thursday. AJ Risley, Zach Melton, Dave Feldberg, a couple people just really, really struggling to get out of the qualifier round, even make it to the quarterfinals. Simon Lazat had to go like eagle birdie
I know, that was
to even stay,
crazy.
which was nuts.
He just seemed like he was in a funk the whole round. Like he, I don't know,
I think
his,
he's been in a funk since.
but his
He's been in a
vibe
funk.
seemed, his energy just seemed low. Like
Yeah.
he didn't really care or something. And
I think it's
then,
that time of year, man. And Simon's especially susceptible to that. Like when he's out, I think, you
yeah.
know.
But then he really bounced back, and that actually surprised me. I was like, oh, he's doing Simon things now.
I mean,
Yes.
that's the thing. He can like flip a switch like anybody, and it's just nuts. And so he
Yeah.
went with this eagle, and I mean, I was at this tournament last year. I don't remember seeing anyone run that eagle, and a few people did this year. So that was kind of fun. And then, in the quarterfinal round, you had people like Jeremy Colin didn't make it through. Drew
Yeah.
Gibson, Greg Barsby, the world champion, didn't even get through the quarterfinal round. And then you go semifinal round, and Paul McBeth and Eagle McMahon don't make it through.
I
And
know.
so it's like the format for this thing is just bonkers, but I think the best possible way. And I really wonder, like, I think about guys like Paul McBeth and Eagle McMahon, and to me, they are really like groove-based players. Whereas they will, like, there will be times where they will obviously come out and shoot the hot round in the beginning of the tournament. McBeth did it at USDGC and things like that. But there are plenty of times where they will come out and shoot a I don't want to say mediocre, but just a fine first round and make up ground the rest of the tournament with a hot round or something like that.
Oh, so you mean groove as in
Like
for
it
the
takes them a
tournament or
while. It
for a
takes them a while.
round?
It take like for the tournament, it almost takes them
Oh,
a while
okay.
to get into a groove. So like I wonder if they didn't start playing until Saturday.
Yeah, I
And so
know.
I think sitting around for 2 days impacted them. And I think you could, I honestly, I wonder if you could say the same for Paige Pierce, who also didn't make it through the women's semifinals.
Yeah, it's possible.
I don't know. So those are the big surprises to me.
Yeah.
What were you gonna say?
It was surprising. But so this is what I was going to say about the women's round, Paige especially getting pushed out. People talking about the disadvantage of, so I'll backtrack a little bit. We got to watch two live cards of women, which was super awesome. I'm not sure that's ever been done before, but it
In
was
the
really cool.
same day? Yeah, I'm not sure.
Yeah,
Not in
but
recent memory, but
and yeah,
it could have
so
been done in like the DG Planet days. I'm not sure.
maybe, yeah. But because of that, they were forced to, obviously, those two cards couldn't play at the same time. So the first card of women would tee off at
I think it was like
11 or something.
nine.
Oh,
Oh,
was
yeah,
that at nine?
it was noon, I believe. It was nine my
Okay.
time, so
Oh, so
noon.
it was 11 my time. Yes, we're all right. So 11 my time, and then the next card would tee off at three. So Paige was in that early round and shot three down. And people are talking about is there a disadvantage of now she's finished, and now the other women know what they have to beat,
Well,
like
no,
the
because in
score that
that
they have to
point,
beat.
at that point, it's win your card or go home. I mean, yeah, you have the one wild card, but
Yeah.
I don't know that that
But
gives you. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if I buy that
I
argument.
don't know. Because I'm not a player who counts my strokes or really cares about score till the end. Like if I know it's going to be close, this actually happened this past weekend. I tied and had to go into a sudden death playoff with someone that I haven't done that in years. but I didn't know the scores. And when I was about to make my last putt, I was like, I'm pretty sure this is going to tie if I make this. And luckily I made it. But I wonder, I think there's more looking at scores and visibility around
Well, in
that for
this
the
type of
second
format,
card.
yeah.
So I don't know. I'm just trying to, I'm thinking out loud about whether or not I think it's a disadvantage because I'm kind of, as always, wishy-washy on the subject,
I mean,
but
I don't think it's a disadvantage because I mean, the only disadvantage I could see would be like time of day and conditions and whatever. But the women normally play early. I mean, maybe there's a, I don't know. I mean, you got to put yourself in position there and just like with this format, you know that you have to win your card.
Yeah,
That's all it
definitely.
comes down to. So I don't know if now, I mean, did it maybe, did Paige Bierkus maybe know that she needed to shoot better? I don't know, but I mean, she only had one birdie in the last five holes.
Yeah. Well, the other
So.
funny thing too is that Paige Pierce was rolling around in the golf cart watching the second card of women,
Yeah.
and they were talking about in the commentary like, "Oh, I wonder if they're getting anxiety
Intimidation.
because she's yeah." I mean, I'm sure she was doing it because she probably had nothing else to do and
Yeah.
was there for to support her teammates and all that. But it was just funny that people might think that, like, "Oh, she's just trying to scare them into not getting birdies."
Oh, I doubt that. I
I
doubt
know, I
that.
know.
She's not
I
that
don't know.
intimidating.
No.
I mean, let's talk about the women's final though before we go into the men's final. This round was great. It was super close between Sarah Hogan and Katrina Allen. I know, Sarah, you had a chance to check it out, I think a little more closely than I did. But really tight up until the end. Katrina comes out with three early birdies. You know, Hogan was kind of chipping away, but to me, from my vantage point, I thought Katrina was going to run away with this thing. I don't know if
Yeah.
you felt the same.
I picked Sarah to win, and so I was kind of hoping that she would the whole time. But just through the momentum that Kat had through winning the Hall of Fame, I think she brought a lot of that confidence with her to this event. And it seems to really suit her. Like, she puts down rollers super easily.
Yes.
And her approach shot game is ridiculous, and that's really important on these open shots where you might not have as many trees to really gauge the distance. At least that's something that I battle with. But yeah, for Katrina, her round was pretty steady. Her last round, she took three birdies, all pars, and then had an unfortunate six after she went OB on hole 14.
And
But other than
that
that, it
was
was
like the
just
turning point hole.
exactly. So it was very steady. And then Hokum had more of a roller coaster round. She had one birdie. Well, so she had two birdies in the same amount of time that Kat had three, and then she went bogey, birdie, par, bogey. And then on the hole that Kat took her OB stroke and took a six, Hokum took a four, followed that up by another birdie, and then bogeyed, par, birdie. So it was just like a lot of roller coaster things happening. So to her, I mean, I'm sure she knew that things were really close and she had to pull out a birdie on the last hole. If not, they would have tied and gone into a playoff. But yeah, just kind of two different ways to get to almost the same result.
Yeah.
It was interesting. But
Shout out to Smashbox, or I guess it was on the Disc Golf Pro Tour channel, but it was Terry Miller and Johnny V and Dixon and all those guys, Smashbox guys. They did bring two rounds of live coverage every day, for the people who were wanting it. It was there. Pretty cool
yeah,
that
I
there was
watched.
that there was that much coverage. I think the men's, I didn't see what the women's round peaked at yesterday. The men's round crept up a little bit over 4,000 toward the end, which is
Okay.
pretty nice.
Yeah.
So yeah, good turnout. You know what? Let's do this. Since we were just talking about Sarah Hokum and the final round and everything, I had a nice discussion with her about that final round, especially those last couple consequential holes. So let's go to that, and then we'll come back and we will talk about how the men's side shook out in a little more detail, and then we'll chat with Chris Dickerson. So we will be back here in just a minute on PDJ Radio. All right, welcome back to the show, Disc Golf Pro Tour points champion and now tour champion, Sarah Hokum. Sarah, congratulations.
Thank you, Steve. Thanks for having me on.
Of course, thank you for coming on. I you know, what a difference a year makes. I have a very distinct memory of talking to you last year after the Pro Tour Championship, in the parking lot there at New World, and you were pretty upset. You were emotional. It's been a long season, and now here you are at the end of the year, and you're taking home the hardware and the big paycheck. What's the feeling like for you this year, this time, compared to last year around this time?
Well, that's funny that you mentioned that interview that you did with me then, because that was kind of a little bit of the fuel of that helped me learn that lesson from last year. That you know, I kind of gave up last year. It was just a really rough end. I threw a bunch of shots out of bounds and was struggling to keep my composure, and I kind of just gave up. And then I hated leaving like that. And I really felt like that kind of fueled my fire over the winter time to get in the best shape I could and get my game in shape. And so then this year, when I was going into the tournament, I definitely remembered that feeling leaving the tournament, being disappointed because I basically hadn't given it my all the whole time. I gave up at the end. And if I had maybe played a little better at the end, I might have shot a little bit better. You know, I might have gotten placed a little bit better. So I wanted to take that lesson and turn around into something better. And so my goal was never to give up and always to stay positive. And I know that there's a huge potential swing on the back five holes. So that was part of my game plan.
Well, gosh, I that was a great segue. Thank you for doing my job. The end of this course, I mean, really, on both sides, on in both divisions, really was very consequential. Really, really tight up until the end, and then, you know, pretty much starting with hole 14. Which, you know, how what was your approach on that one? That's not exactly the most friendly sidearm shot off the tee. So I mean,
Yeah.
what was your approach there, and I mean, how important was that hole for you, in your success this weekend?
Well, so that the importance of that hole is kind of also tied to my memory of that hole. And that was one of the holes on the back of the course during the finals last year that I threw a couple shots out of bounds and really struggled with. And that was kind of a difference maker for me. So I really focus on that one in practice. And so I did take a slightly different approach, throwing a stable fairway driver on a flex to try to keep it in bounds on the right side. And then in the final round, I had to club down a little bit because we had this kind of big tailwind.
Oh, okay.
And so I had to change my game a little bit, but I threw a Patriot that time. And it stayed on the line and stayed in bounds on the right just barely. So that was a pivotal moment for me to be able to get to make that decision and learn from my lessons from last year. And then I'll also execute the hole all the way down to the birdie. And also, it just so happens to coincide when Kat throws her approach a little bit wide or harder, and ends up out of bounds, causing basically a two-stroke lead or a two-stroke swing, and me catching her and us being tied for the lead at that moment.
Yeah. So I mean, at that point, then you go into the island hole 15. And is it, I mean, from there, is it a point where you know, okay, I've got to take advantage of this? Did you change your, I mean, there's not much you can change on your approach there. Is it you pretty much just have to hit the island, but was there a change in your mental approach to be like, all right, this is the time where I have to finish this thing off?
I wasn't trying to push any harder than I already had. You know, I have the holes I can get birdies on out there, and I have the ones I can't. And so I pretty much play that shot the same way no matter what, unless I have a crazy wind, and I have a couple different options in crazy wind. But I was really just trying to get it in bounds. You know, I know that like that's a pivotal hole, and just like it always is. And the goal was just to get it in bounds, not to try to push for a birdie.
And then, you know, coming down the stretch, you have a bogey on 16, but you recover with the par, and then more importantly, the birdie on that difficult par five at the end there. You know, I mean, what was the feeling like going into that final hole? It was, I got to imagine it was fairly tense, fairly exciting. Were there some nerves on the final tee there?
You know, I actually felt pretty comfortable at that moment. I had managed to stay in my game plan
Already, you know, I'd had 17 holes of practice ignoring the score and just throwing my shots. So, you know, and I had executed shots down the stretch pretty reliably. So I was feeling honestly pretty confident, and the nerves weren't really even there. I probably didn't even feel even a little bit nervous until, I mean, I was always a little nervous playing, right? Just in general, but the nerves didn't really get more noticeable until after Robin yelled after my approach shot on the final hole.
Just because you'd put it so close?
Well, I guess, and I guess, you know, he was so excited at that moment that I realized that something big was on the line.
That's awesome. You know, I know you mentioned Robin at the NT finale. What's it been like to have, you know, his support this season?
It's been really, 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 really awesome to have someone who knows my game out there to help me make game time decisions, and also to, you know, keep my mental state calm, help me walk me through, talk me through different struggles. You know, it's just nice to have someone to bounce that kind of stuff off of, along with, of course, being, you know, the master of pack mules, making sure I have everything I need. And it's really been amazing. And just having that support, just in general.
Right. What's, did you do anything good to celebrate last night? I mean, this is the last, I mean, I know you have the Phoenix Ladies Open, but this is the last big one of the season, right? Did you do anything to really cap it off?
Yeah, actually, I went out with the guys from One More Round, and we went to my favorite thing. I never do it. I don't do it very often, only like to really celebrate. But I went to, Fogo de Chao, the Brazilian steakhouse.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Yeah, that was amazing. I definitely had like the meat sweats about 20 minutes in.
Well, you had a little extra money in your pocket to pay for it, right?
Yeah, wow, the payout was really big. I think it's the biggest payout I've had all year, and maybe for a couple of years now. So that was pretty exciting. I didn't look at any of it beforehand.
I'm looking at your player page right now, and it was 2,500, correct?
Yes.
Then it was definitely the largest of this season. I haven't gone back into prior seasons, but I mean, speaking of this season as a whole, you had this is your 10th win overall, if I'm counting right. Fourth on the Pro Tour. You know, it seems like you're one of these players who season in, season out, we know you're going to be contending. You're like a dependable player. What have you? You know, do you feel like it's just a process of maturing and growing and learning more every year? Or, you know, what are you able to do to continually stay up in the mix?
I'm not really sure. I guess it's just I'm all about just the grind and the process and enjoying what I'm doing and enjoying the process of learning how discs fly and finding control over my body and understanding the biomechanics of my stroke in ways that I can, you know, quickly dispel any form issues and, you know, make sure my stroke is consistent. And I don't know, I'm a student of the game, so, you know, it never really gets old.
How much does the biomechanical stuff come in terms of taking care of your body? Because you obviously, you put your body through a bit more of a contortion act than most players, I would say, with your form. Is that something where do you end up paying for that throughout the season and you have to kind of, you know, take a little more self-care than maybe other players will have to?
I think it's kind of an athlete thing in general, you know. I mean, just in any athletic movement you do, you're going to have tendonitis building up. And, you know, I'm one of the more veteran players on the road. And so I think that just my age and the amount of shots I've thrown in my lifetime, combine that with, you know, the sidearm throw in general. I do give myself a pitch count so that I don't, I mean, not like a hard one, but I try to make sure that I don't overthrow and don't throw too many shots that are unnecessary.
Okay. It's a good way to keep the scores down, too, if you keep yourself to a pitch count, right?
Yeah. And then I've used kinesiology tape to, you know, to give just my joints extra support. And, you know, most of that self-care happens in the off season as well.
to
try to, build up those micro tears and get your body healthy to go for the whole season. It's tough, man, out there with the injuries. By this time of the season, I mean, I feel like most players have an injury or two or something that they've been nursing.
While we were chatting there, I took a little spin back through your career history, and this was the largest payout of your career. So congratulations.
Oh, wow. Cool. That's
That's very
neat.
exciting. What's the off season hold for you besides training? Is there any do you plan to make an off season home anywhere? Is there anything big in the mix for your game or anything like that coming?
I mean, I've got some goals. I haven't quite sat down and worked through everything that I'm going to focus on this off season. But it'll definitely be training heavy and getting my body in good shape for the upcoming season. Also be, working through social media stuff and working with all my sponsors to figure out how 2019 is going to shape out, work on different initiatives. Also be doing, just some general work. Like I'm putting up Christmas lights this winter for a spell in Texas with Mace Man, which is kind of fun. But yeah, it's actually very nice going into the off season to get such a big paycheck so that I have a little bit of cushion there, and so I don't have to scramble so hard for work in the off season. So I'm excited for that.
What have been some of your like off-season odd jobs in the past?
Oh gosh, I've cleaned houses. I have house sat. I had dog sat for a while. I've painted homes. I've done, geez, lots and lots and lots of random things. Worked at a winery.
That sounds like
Man.
it could have been
Oh yeah, good
fun.
time for sure. I've waited tables. Gosh, I can't even. I've been an office clerk. Just, I mean, whatever. Whatever.
Is there ever a part of you that is just like, you know what? Maybe I don't need to do this grind every season. Maybe I'm good to just like settle down and have a regular job and not try and get something every season, or does the game just keep pulling you back every time?
For sure. I mean, there's certainly times I am like, oh man, it would be really nice if I could have my own house and decorate my kitchen and have a real kitchen to use all the time and be able to sit on a couch and watch television or whatever people do nowadays. But at the same time, I'm like, I don't want to give up this lifestyle either, so I mean, I don't really see the point of kind of settling down. I like being on the road.
Well, very nice. So we look forward to seeing you more on the road next season, Sarah. And again, congratulations on a great year. It's been a pleasure to watch.
Thanks, Steve. I appreciate all the work you guys are doing there at the PDGA, and the media is coming out amazing. I'm excited for all the partnerships that I got to witness at the summit. So
Yeah, it's going to be a
it's
good
gonna
time. I think we have some good things in store for 2019, so we're looking forward to it.
Yes.
All right, well, that was Sarah Hokum. You're a Disc Golf Pro Tour champion this year on both the point side and the championship side. Again, Sarah, congratulations. Thanks for your time, and we will catch up with you soon.
Thanks, Steve.
And be safe. Please be safe putting up those Christmas lights.
I
Make sure
will.
you get some good shoes.
Yeah, it's a good call. Good
All
call.
right, we'll
Thank
be
you.
back here in just a minute on PDGA Radio. Congratulations again to Sarah Hokum. Thank you for coming on the show. I love how she talked about getting the meat sweats because she went to celebrate at Fogo Chao. I think that's great. Very honest moment, and I love it.
I cannot relate.
It's your favorite place. We've got to talk about a situation that happened on hole 15 yesterday at the Tour Championship. We will heretofore call it Railroad Tie Gate because nothing in the world can happen without attaching gate to it.
Course.
Deflate Gate, Water Gate, the original, the OG gate right there. Whew. Let's not get too
Yes.
political
Ooh,
today.
wait, what was
Let's
the
keep it
chipmunk
disco.
gate too? There was
Ch
chipmunk
Oh,
gate.
that's right. I forgot about Chipmunk
That was
Gate.
my favorite gate. That was the cutest gate.
That was
At Maple Hill, right?
I really enjoyed how Bradley Williams like steered into the skid on that one, and like the next day went and took a picture like he was trying to bait the chip. Do you remember that?
Oh.
Like, oh yeah, there was a picture on Facebook like the next day of him like going and essentially like trying like to like bait a chipmunk with like a
Oh
treat
my
or something.
gosh.
It's hilarious.
Well, not to get too off subject, but there's already memes that are out that have it's like a picture of Nate Sexton, and then next to it, it's like a whole bunch of railroad ties, and
Oh
it's like,
man.
here are the railroad ties you're looking for.
Oh gosh. All right. So all right, we gotta lay this one out. It's hole 15. This is a 222-foot island hole. And at a
With
consequence
Mando.
with a with, yeah, with a
Double
Mando.
Mando.
Yeah. At a consequential time, I mean, you're coming down the stretch, hole 15. You know, this is good. We see a lot of tournaments do this with an island hole 8. You know, you've got GBO's got hole 16. USDGC has hole 17. This one they went hole 15. And so Nate Sexton throws a forehand and it checks up very nicely and then not very nicely, just like total slow wobble rolls. And it finds the one gap in the border of the island, which for the border was made out of these railroad ties, which is why everyone's talking about railroad ties. Which, why are they called tie? I don't,
I
anyway.
don't
They're
know.
giant chunks of
I
wood.
never understood it.
Giant chunk of wood.
Yeah.
And it rolls out of bounds. Problem being, the problem being, we didn't know technically for sure if it was out of bounds because there was no, be there, because there was this gap where the railroad ties were, there was also no string or OB line marked. There was also nothing on the caddy book that was given to players that said, you know, for example, the inside of the railroad ties is your OB line. Like, for example, at Pro Worlds, Sarah, you know, you played on Fox Run there. They had stakes, right?
Yeah.
And the rules for that one were the OB line was the, I believe, is the inside of the
Inside.
stakes or something. But
Yes.
that was clearly delineated in the rule in the caddy guide and the course rules and everything. This one was not. And so obviously, looking on the video, Nate was pretty much out, but there was this like small opportunity for him not to be, I guess, because it wasn't well defined. And that so it kind of became this little kind of controversial moment on the video. You had Nate kind of talking with the group, being like, well, that's, yeah, it should be out, but can someone point to where it says that it's actually out?
Yeah.
There was no official on the card with them, which was, in my opinion, that was one of the bigger, errors of the situation because they were the only card on the course. There was only one card playing for each division yesterday.
Yeah.
So that was unfortunate, and you know, so Nate's there being like, it would be really nice if there was an official out here. There was no line drawn, et cetera, et cetera. So ultimately, what happened is he just played it as a provisional, which technically was actually incorrect, and we'll have a rules break on that from Robert Leonard in a little bit. But basically, what came out of it was that Nate hits the putt from where his shot was, so he took a provisional birdie, but then also had to play the hole from the drop zone. As if he had gone out of bounds, took a four there. And then Steve Dodge ruled over the phone that it was out based on how it was described to him. And Nate ultimately took a four, birdied the final hole, lost by one stroke. So what we're talking here is if that comes into a birdie, you know, Nate Sexton wins.
Yeah.
And beyond just a victory, this was like there was a large drop off in the payout. I believe it was like from 7,500 for Chris Dickerson for first place to, where is it? I have it, $3,000 for second place. So it was a big ruling there.
Yeah.
Now,
Yeah.
I want to say a couple things about this because the whole internet is talking about it if you follow disc golf, and that's great, and it's good to do these things. And you know, we're gonna have controversies. No one is perfect, in our sport or at our events. I don't expect anyone to be. My feeling with this is, okay, the railroad tie people have gone back and done screenshots. The railroad tie was gone for all three rounds. So
yep.
This wasn't a situation where it got moved and then they were playing a different course the third or fourth time through. So
right.
Take that one out of the mix. And then, you know, there's all the people who say, man, if that railroad tie would have been there, it bounces off there and he has a birdie.
Yep.
Yeah, but that wasn't there. So I don't think you can really hang your hat on that argument. I think more of the issue here, at least from my vantage point, is that there was no line marked and it just didn't come off as looking as polished and professional as we would want it to be. And then you have this moment with 4,000 people watching on live stream and Nate Sexton basically pleading with the camera saying, man, I really wish there was an official here to make this call. And on the whole, it was just kind of a rough look. And just kind of a weird way to end things. Nate actually called me up last night. He was kind of getting some people's opinions about this. And, you know, he made clear, he said, look, I'm not taking anything from Chris. I'm not saying I even want, like, the title or the money or anything like that. But he wants to see something, hopefully, get changed for the future so that something like this doesn't happen again. I guess he said that Steve Dodge told him that the entire width of that railroad tie would have been considered the OB line. And I wrote down what Nate said, and he said that's like doing surgery with a butcher knife if you have that wide of an OB line. He also just said the whole thing was kind of bush league. He didn't sound mad. I don't want it to sound like Nate Sexton was like ranting to me on the phone. He was actually quite calm. Probably more calm than a lot of people would have been in that scenario had that happened. But I did try and reach out to Steve Dodge today. I didn't hear back from him yet. If for some reason he gets back to me before, you know, we publish this podcast, I will put a little extra piece and tack it on to the end of this. But really, Sarah, this is just a long way of saying that I hope that what comes from this is that everybody can kind of learn out of this situation. Number one. Yeah. Tournament staff, this should be like a no-brainer that there should be a line or a string there if that that railroad tie isn't going to be there. Or if it's not going to be marked with a line or a string, it should be stated in the caddy guide or at the player meeting or at the starter's table, none of which I've been told that it was done, that the inside line, you know, you connect with an imaginary line to the inside side of the inside line of the railroad ties.
Yeah.
I think that would have alleviated a lot of these issues. That said, I also put some responsibility on the players. Dana Vici, who is not at the Pro Tour Championship this year, put it best on Twitter when he essentially said 50 of the best players in the world are walking around there all weekend and nobody catches this. Like,
yeah, that's true.
So I think there is some onus on the players here. I think we all need to kind of be shepherds of the game right now with where it is. And you know, there were multiple other chances for somebody to catch that. And unfortunately, it just came down to where the time that it was caught was probably at the worst moment possible. Sarah, I will yield the floor to you now because I just talked a lot about that.
Well, I was just going to echo your sentiment. So oversight is big. The PDGA has hired people specifically to do site reviews of courses, not only a year in advance so that they can catch issues like this and make course changes and things like that. Of course, this would probably be different a year in advance because I heard that the railroad tie was gone to get a mower through there to mow the green. So a year in advance would not have worked, but
sure,
having someone there to provide oversight, to walk the course beforehand to make sure there are no issues. I know that happens on the NT and PDGA major side.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be surprised to see some more support go toward that next year, or at least some more advisement to the Pro Tour. And I'm sure the Pro Tour will learn from this. I guarantee you Steve Dodge will be going through the courses with a fine-tooth comb now.
Yeah.
You know, so maybe that's the good that comes of this, is that, okay.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping.
It's a bummer now, but from here on out, the courses are going to have no issues.
Yep, that's what I hope. And there's always fluky things that happen, of course. There's the course that I played yesterday, there's a barn And there's no possible way that on hole two you could throw inside the barn. But those are the types of things that you say, like, oh, no one's ever going to do that. And someone is always going to do the thing that you don't think anyone will ever do. Like,
yes,
it's going to happen. So you just need to go to all extremes to make sure that these things are in place. And then what you're saying about the player side of it is, and I've witnessed this a lot, and it's not a slam on Nate or anyone on the card, but it's kind of a, I mean, I probably would do the same thing. If it doesn't affect me, it doesn't exist kind of thing.
Right.
Like if I saw the court, that course, the way it was,
yeah, I'm just walking out through the gap in the railroad ties thinking, oh, sweet. Thank you. I don't have to lift my foot up higher.
Or like, yeah. Or I don't have to wheel my cart over this railroad tie. I've got like a little walkway. So because it didn't affect me in my shot or anyone on my card, there's no reason to bring it to light. So, but it's one of those things. It's like, oh, no one's ever going to land there, so I'm not going to say anything. So maybe this will make people a little bit more aware of course issues before it becomes a problem.
I know I'll be looking for
not
stuff.
For them, but yeah, for sure. And there's always issues. Like I said, there's a lot of fluky stuff with out of bounds, island holes, specifically Mando's. There's always stuff that's going to happen, and like you said, I hope this is just a learning lesson for everybody involved and in the disc golf community.
And none of that takes away from the fact that Chris Dickerson smashed everybody the other three rounds.
Yeah.
So like, I know this one situation where it looks kind of like, oh man, he only had a one shot win. This could have been 2-stroke swing. Blah blah blah. But
I hope he doesn't feel that way. I hope no one has made him feel that way.
I don't think anybody has. I haven't seen anybody do that. Like, he went 10 down, 10 down, 13 down. Absolutely deserved the victory.
For sure.
And had to collect himself through that whole situation as well, because that's not a comfortable situation for anyone, not just Nate Sexton. That's not comfortable for anyone on that card.
Nope.
So, you know, credit to the players for getting through that. But let's hope that it's just a good learning experience for here on out. I think let's do this. We're gonna hear from Robert Leonard, who's gonna kind of break down the scenario here with how the provisional was played out, because it almost kind of shouldn't have been. So we're gonna let Robert explain that in a rules break, and then we're gonna Sarah and I are gonna talk with Chris Dickerson. Then we'll come back and we will wrap up the show. So we'll be back in just a moment here on PDJ Radio.
Hi, this is Robert Leonard, PDGA Marshal and Tournament Director for the 2018 PDGA Amateur World Disc Golf Championship driven by Innova, and this is the PDGA Radio Rules Break. This week we're looking at a situation that occurred on hole 15 at the Disc Golf Pro Tour Championship hosted by Prodigy in Jacksonville, Florida. The hole was an island green, and there was railroad ties that went around the island to make the green. Nate Sexton threw a shot into the green, and there was a small opening from the railroad ties so mowers could get in and out of the green. The disc wobbled and rolled directly in between two railroad ties in this gap. The group walked up and noticed that not only was the disc straddling what would be the where a railroad tie would be, but there was no line painted, drawn, flagged, nothing. There was also no mention in the caddy book of what to do in that situation. So the group truly had no idea what to do in the situation. So there were two rule situations that occurred in this discussion that we thought would be interesting to discuss. The first one was Ricky Wysocki suggested to take a picture of it. Nate Sexton immediately said, I don't think you can do that. And then someone from either the group or the crowd said, well, no, you can do a pic, you just can't do a video. And as QA10 does point out to us, that is incorrect. All forms of video and media, which would include something like a picture, are banned from making rules decisions. So you cannot take a picture, a video, anything like that, and take to a tournament director or an official and say, here's the picture of where this disc is. What do you think? So then that kind of bleeds into the next scenario. So because the group cannot figure out what to do, they can't figure out whether Nate is inbounds or out of bounds, they decide to take a provisional and play from if the disc was inbounds and if the disc was out of bounds. And this immediately sounds like the right thing to do, and it probably would have been the end result, but the group didn't technically get to that result correctly. 809.02 does discuss what a provisional is and basically how they apply. In section B2 of 809.02, we do learn that a provisional should be played if you are
appealing the ruling of a group or appealing the ruling of an official. The group did not make a ruling, so therefore, technically, since there was no rule made, Nate is not appealing a ruling, and therefore a provisional is not applicable. Now, I do know that if you've played any event that has Big Dog Sweeten at it, you do hear his famous provisional, 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 and Big Dog, like usual, is very knowledgeable and knows the rules up and down. But the one thing that people do need to understand about provisionals is there are a lot of situations where people think provisionals are the correct solution, and they're really not. And this is one of those situations. A provisional should not be used because you can't figure out whether you're in bounds or out of bounds. Provisional should be used in the situation of applying the rules. So the proper way to handle this situation was the group to say, if the back part of this railroad tie is the line, you are out of bounds. If the inside part is in bounds, you are in bounds. That discussion never happened. And finally, the group should then say, because we believe the back part is out of bounds, you are out of bounds. And then at that point, Nate does have the right, as 809.02b2 points out, to appeal that ruling. Yes, the result would have been the same in the scenario as Nate was declared out of bounds, but we do need to make sure that we are applying the rules correctly. So this is once again Robert Leonard with your PDJ Radio Rules Break, reminding you, as always, rules are your friend.
Hey everyone, this is Steve checking back in with a little solo segment. I told you earlier in the show that if I caught up with Steve Dodge that I would add a segment. I did catch up with Steve Dodge, and I wanted to pass along some of the highlights from our conversation. Regarding the lack of an OB line or string with the wall, the island wall in question, he did say that there was indeed no line or string. Or any clarification of where the OB would be at the starter's table or anything like that. He took the fault for that. He said it was human error or human oversight is what I wrote down in my notes, and that he took the responsibility for that. Regarding some of the other issues that might come of it, he did say there was some clarification on the scorecard in terms of order of precedence for OB, being that there were walls and lines and strings and borders and banners. He did say that the wall was clarified as one of the pieces of OB, but that's kind of what he was leaning on here. There are some positives that come out of this, and this is really what we talked about in terms of what we addressed earlier in the show, that some change can come from this, and it sounds like there already has. He is already working on developing a course checklist for next season. Essentially, there's a Pro Tour staff member who goes out and sets up the course. They put a lot of the course dressing on there, the banners, the tubes on the elevated baskets, things like that. This person is now also going to be charged with double and triple checking the, OB lines and strings and everything like that. So that hopefully there can be, fewer of these errors in the future. And the goal is to make this checklist available to players so that when they go out for their practice rounds, if they want to, they can also check along with it and make sure everything is in order. And, the biggest thing that Steve Dodge said, and he kind of started off our conversation with this, is he didn't want this situation to take away from Chris Dickerson's victory. He kind of compared it to the U.S. Open in women's tennis earlier this year, where Naomi Osaka upset Serena Williams, but much of the focus after the fact was on Serena Williams. She had been penalized for various infractions throughout the event, and there was quite a bit of a maelstrom after that, and he was really worried that this kind of focus on the railroad ties on the island would take away from Chris Dickerson's achievement. I assured him that we've talked about Chris plenty on the show and that we are about to have an interview with him as well. So that is as good of a time as any to introduce our chat with Chris Dickerson. So we will get to that right now on PDJ Radio.
All
All right, welcome back to the show. And joining us for the first time on PDGA Radio is Disc Golf Pro Tour champion Chris Dickerson. Chris, congrats on the big win this weekend.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
So we'll get the hardest question out of the way first. How did you celebrate your win?
Actually, me and my wife and Madison and Calvin went out and ate dinner at just a little place.
You guys are, you sound like you're partying way too hard, man.
I know. I need to tone it back a little bit.
Yeah, what kind of food did you guys get? Where'd you go?
Well, they all ate at, I think it was a burrito place. I can't remember the name of it, but I actually ran across the road and got Zaxby's.
That doesn't surprise me at all.
No, I doubt it will surprise very many people.
Is Zaxby's the official chicken place of Chris Dickerson?
Actually, Chick-fil-A is, but being a Sunday, I got to find somewhere else to go.
The struggle is real. That's the only, I think Sarah and I have talked about that on this show. That is the only time I ever think about Chick-fil-A is on Sunday. It's like a Murphy's Law.
Yeah.
That's the worst time.
Yep. So, obviously, I mean, you played tremendously well at a New World this weekend. 10 down, 2 rounds in a row, 13 down for the course record. And then the final round, the vibe is totally different. The wind kicks up. Scoring is difficult to come by, it seems like. What was the vibe like on that card and just for you in general? Kind of, it seemed like everyone had to really grind out that round. But did it feel like that while you were playing?
It kind of did. Like you said, the wind picked up. It was 20-plus mile-per-hour winds out there. And, I mean, a lot of those holes are long to begin with. Longer par fours, longer par threes. So you add in the wind, and it they become pretty hard to reach.
So is your mental game any different? This is kind of a follow-up question to that. Like, were your nerves acting up, or were you doing things that you didn't expect, like shots came out differently because you had the jitters or anything like that?
A couple shots did kind of flip over a little more than I thought they would because the wind was so hard. And to be honest, I didn't really have nerves until the last two or three holes.
Yeah.
Whenever, I think it was after hole 16, I looked at the scoreboard. I kind of thought about what I needed to do from then on, depending on, you know, what everybody else does, because you're not really playing a tournament then, you're playing match play more or less.
Right.
Yeah. So this
Sarah.
Oh, so you've been on lead cards before. You're no stranger to being at the top of the leaderboard, like we saw at Ledgestone and Hall of Fame. So what was the difference this time? You were kind of at the top of the leaderboard the entire event. You didn't have to throw down a ridiculous score the last round to get in there. And I don't know, it's interesting to me just personally, if I think I would probably have nerves from the first hole onward, but it's interesting that your nerves didn't kick in till later. Like what was different this time around than those events?
Well, being kind of an elimination tournament, I'd made plans already. If I would have gotten put out on Thursday, I was actually going to drive to Virginia and play in a tournament up there. So I went into the tournament thinking, you know, if I play good, I advance. If I don't play good, or if I play just bad enough to not make the cut, I still get the, I think it was $500, and I get to go play another tournament.
Yeah.
So after the first day, I heard a couple jokes. Hey, you don't get to go play that tournament. And I was like, yeah. There's still one more day. I could possibly get put out on Friday and drive through the night and go play it. And that was my plan.
Yeah.
So after Friday's round, I heard a few more of the same joke. Hey, doesn't look like you're going to make that tournament. And I was like, yeah, well, this time it's definitely out.
It's so funny, though. Instead of them being like, oh, you're going to stick around and win this event, they were like, oh, you're not going to get to go to that tournament. Like, the spin on that is hilarious.
Exactly.
All right, so the question I have to ask you, obviously, because it ended up being a weird, like, semi-controversial situation, was the situation on hole 15 yesterday with the missing railroad tie, and how that all went down. What was your take on that situation? You know, obviously, like, it was obvious Nate was out, but just in terms of, like, how everything was handled and having that situation come up in that moment, like, what was it like for you?
Right. It was a really awkward moment, because being in that situation, I mean, I wanted to give him the benefit of the doubt, and I didn't put my input in until, you know, I really needed to. And I didn't want to put my input in until I really needed to. And luckily it didn't come to that. It didn't come down to like a card vote. One or two of the players had kind of mentioned, hey, I think it's out, but we never really took an official vote or anything. We played
right.
A provisional. So somebody mentioned that, and Nate was like, okay, yeah, I'll play a provisional and see what happens later. So he played the provisional, and on the very next tee pad, I think there was a volunteer or somebody from the Disc Golf Pro Tour was walking with their card, and Steve actually called and made the ruling while we were on the next tee pad. He said from the info that he had gathered and everything, he said it was out of bounds. But, I mean, it's a really tough call, and I hate that it had to go that way.
I mean, would you in that situation, would you have ultimately called him out if it came down to a vote, though, right? Because that was mostly what it looked like.
Yeah, I believe the way they were playing it was the inside of the wall. And if it would have been the inside of the wall, you know, his disc was, it would have been one of those calls where it was on the line, but it wasn't across the line. You know,
right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. On the inside. It basically came down to that.
So then you go in and you've got a lead going into the final couple holes there. And then hole 18, everyone's throwing down the roller, and yours, I think you were the shortest off the tee, right? So was there like an extra, like, added level of pressure there at that moment?
Kind of. Yeah, I led off on the tee. I had a one stroke lead, and I actually changed up my roller a little bit. The other three rounds, I was going for kind of a cut roller to get pretty far past the Mando. There's actually a golf green down there, and I was trying to get to the green, if not like a little right of it. And going into the last round, I wanted nothing to do with that Mando. I wanted no chance of missing the Mando whatsoever. So I tried to go down the middle with a roller, and I caught a decently early tree. So I was like, maybe I can get in a good spot to get a birdie. Maybe not. We'll have to see. So I watched, I think it was either Nate or Nico that was next. Let's say Nico went next. He actually hit the same tree that I hit with a roller. And then Nate followed it up with basically, it looked like the best sidearm I'd ever seen on the hole. Probably was the best sidearm on the hole. Just threw it straight down the middle and ended up in a really good spot. But being the shortest off the tee, I had kind of a ceiling to deal with. So I didn't want to throw a sidearm or a backhand and just basically throw it straight in the ground and basically give myself par at best, probably a bogey, being that short after two. So I threw another roller to get it to the ground quick and make sure, you know, it gets a little bit further down the fairway. And again, I wanted to kind of stay away from, there's three Mandos on the hole. I wanted to stay away from the very last Mando, and actually came within 50 to 70 feet of it. So a little closer than what I wanted.
What percentage of your practice are you actually, I'm just interested. I'm curious about this myself. Do you actually practice rollers? Because I started practicing them and they do not come easily to me. So do you actively practice them in your routine?
Yes. certain holes. I'm lucky enough to have Harmon Hills.
Yes.
close vicinity. And a few holes out there, I'm able to throw rollers on. And like I said, I'm just lucky enough to have it to be able to practice a bunch of different shots. So I do get to practice those more than some courses will allow.
Yeah, I love that course. Definitely one of my top five. So you and I have crossed paths a bit, but there's a lot of people out there in the disc golf world who don't know you as well. And so we want to get to know you a little bit better and allow other people to as well. So
with credit, we have been talking you up all season, right?
Oh, yeah.
I think Sarah even picked, you picked him to win this one. Yes, that was a good call.
I picked you and Hokum, so, you know.
Oh, well, awesome.
I'm a fortune teller. You're welcome. I'm just kidding.
Well, thank you.
Okay, so let's take it back to the beginning. So when and how did you get into disc golf?
I got into disc golf, I think it was my junior year in high school. One of my friends, we were actually going to soccer practice, and they had mentioned playing. And I was like, well, I've never heard of it. Sure, we'll go play. And we ended up going to Dick's and getting the 3-disc starter pack. And there were three of us. So we each took one of the discs, and we found out pretty quickly, you know, that the driver goes a little bit further than the mid and the mid a little further than the putter. So we ended up alternating who gets the disc on every other hole.
That's awesome.
So we didn't get to play a full round because we ended up losing two out of the three discs in the first round. So, yeah, after that, I mean, I've always loved the concept of golf. And after getting out and playing it a few times, I really fell in love with it.
So could you, who would win in soccer, you or Eric Oakley? Didn't he come from a soccer background too?
Ooh, I believe he did. I have no idea.
Better have we need to have a one-on-one next season, I think.
you're too modest, just say you.
So obviously, you know, we know that you've had a ton of success regionally. I think I was just looking at you're like 90 career wins or something ridiculous like that already. But obviously you haven't hit the road as much as some other people. Is it
right?
Do you have like a full-time day job? Is there something that's been keeping you from pursuing like the full-time touring life?
I don't have a full-time day job. So disc golf is what I'm doing for a living right now. But with that being said, the reason I haven't went out west or, you know, other places like that is I don't see really the money in it just yet. Because the way I think of it, if I were to go to the Memorial and, you know, we just got a truck and a camper. So the gas out there and back would easily be $1,000. Because it's like a 25-hour drive just out there from Tennessee. So 50 hours there and back. If I played a couple tournaments out there and, you know, I didn't play great, but I didn't play bad either. I'm thinking I would average out somewhere between like $6 to $1,000 per tournament.
Sure.
So with that being said, I just can't see the money equaling out, you know, because there's so much risk. If you go out there and you have a bad tournament, you're $500 in the hole. If you have a couple bad weeks in a row, you're $1,000 in the negative.
Whereas you can stay relatively local. And I mean, I'm looking at some of the A and B tours you've won, and that's easily, you've got, you know, $600 here, $900 there, like that just makes a lot more. You're a very right. fiscally responsible disc golfer.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm very impressed.
I appreciate it. Yeah, that's my thinking. Whenever they're like, say the Memorial, it's late February, early March, that time of the year, there are you know, B tiers, decent sized B tiers that go on in the southeast, you know, like 3 to 5 hours away. So they usually have a good turnout because it's the first tournament, well, the first bigger tournament of the year.
Right.
And, you know, they usually get 30 to 40 open players. So not only is it a B tier where there's added money or an A tier where there's added money, there's also quite a few people there playing it. So I can stay closer and not spend as much money as I would be traveling to the Memorial or anything like that. And there's still the chance of a good amount of money.
Makes a ton of sense. But so, speaking of that, you guys are planning on going on hitting the road full time next year, right?
Maybe not full time, but
okay,
we're going to try and get to a few more tournaments than I did this year. Having the truck and the camper, it definitely gives us the option to do that now. You know, like go to a tournament and then not have to come straight back home. We can stay out a week or two, depending on what we wanted to do. So we kind of tested that out the last couple of weeks. We went to the Hall of Fame and left from there, went to Florida. And now we're just, I think we're 45 minutes from home, pretty close to that.
That's not too bad. So will your wife, Brittany, and your dog be traveling with you too?
Yes.
Awesome. Your dog is adorable, by the way.
Thank you.
Share with the class, Sarah. What kind of dog is this that we're talking here?
I can't remember.
Australian cattle dog, but everybody in the United States calls it a blue heeler.
Okay.
A blue heeler, that's right.
Yeah, those are good dogs.
Yeah, yeah.
So then, I mean, looking ahead to next year, I mean, you go out with this huge win this season. You know, what is this? Does this change your outlook for next season or any of your goals going into 2019?
Maybe a little bit, not a ton. I mean, I've always kind of thought I can compete. I can be right there with, everybody else, but playing this weekend and, finally getting, a big win, it just kind of reinforces that. It gives me a little bit of confidence, or a little bit more confidence than what I had. So hopefully that'll lead into next season.
All right, so this is the part that we wrap up the interview where we just hammer you with very quick questions, the lightning round. So I'm going to ask you like 10 questions. Just give me the first thing that pops in your head. This is where people get to really know you.
Okay, got it.
All right, so first one, favorite course on tour?
Maple Hill, probably. Right.
Most difficult course on tour?
Ooh, it's kind of a tie, either USDGC or Ledgestone.
Okay, ooh, all those ropes, right?
Yep, exactly.
All right, we may have already slightly covered this one, but maybe there's more. best food on tour?
Wings Over. It's a wings place. They're in, I know there's one in Virginia and there's a few in Ohio.
Are you like a spicy guy?
Just a little bit. Okay. Kind of. It has to be a dry rub. It can't be like a wet sauce or anything like
all
that.
All right. That's good. You got to have those kind of particulars. All right. What's your favorite sport to either watch or play besides disc golf?
Probably soccer.
Okay. If you could have any superpower, what would it be?
Time travel.
Oh, I like that one.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Said that one. Yeah, that's a good
one.
No. Where would you go? Would you go back in time or forward?
Probably both. Okay. I mean, you know, you can.
No, why not?
You can go forward, see what happens. If you want to kind of go back and maybe change some stuff, always have the option.
Oh, that's not bad. It's not a bad idea.
Yeah.
All right. What would you be doing if you weren't a professional disc golfer?
More than likely working on cars. I have an automotive degree from Northeast State Community College. So I had that probably about a year before I actually started touring, so I never really got into the job field, because you know you can't be a mechanic a couple days out of the week. It's a Monday to Friday job, so sure. I would never have any time to practice, or I would have to go to tournaments and not have any practice days to see the course or anything. I'd be playing a lot of tournaments blind.
Are we talking? Wait, like, are we talking like muscle cars or like more modern?
93 Mustang, right?
94.
Oh, yeah. God.
Yeah. Missed a year. So close.
Yeah.
More muscle cars. Yeah. I'm a Ford guy.
Okay. Nice. All right. Next up and coming disc golfer that no one really knows yet. Maybe like the next Chris Dickerson, if you will.
Ooh. Let's see. The Robinson brothers out of Georgia, I think they would be the ones to keep an eye on.
Okay.
Because they haven't really been out on the scene, and maybe, you know, kind of the same thing as me. Not a lot of people know about them just yet, but they I think they both may be 1,000 rated already.
They're pretty close. I know at least one's 999. I think we had Ezra on the Hall of Fame Classic feature okay. card, too. So trying to get him a little love. Nice. Okay. Let's see here. If you're trapped on a desert island and you only get to watch one movie for the rest of your life, what is it?
Deadpool.
Ooh, good one. All right. And good then this is the last one, which you probably know the answer to, but cats or dogs?
Dogs.
Dogs. All right. I figured that was coming.
Yeah.
Well, Chris, thanks, man. It was a pleasure having you on the show. I think we need to do this again sometime, because it sounds like we're probably going to hear more from you next year, if I had to guess.
I hope so.
All right. Well, thank you again. That was Chris Dickerson, Disc Golf Pro Tour Champion, and we'll be back here in just a couple minutes on PDJ Radio. Sarah, I really enjoyed that interview with Chris. I'm not going to lie. I've talked to him a little bit in the last couple years, and I thought he was going to be a little bit harder to talk to, but I really enjoyed talking to him. So
Everybody
go get some Zaxby's in Chris Dickerson's honor. And
maybe they'll sponsor him one day.
I'm excited. I think he's going to do some big stuff next year as he hits the road more, if he hits the road a bit more. So thanks to Chris again for coming on the show. I really enjoyed getting to know him a little bit better there.
Yeah.
So Sarah, as we talked about at the top of the show, the season is kind of wrapped up. We got to kind of figure out what we're going to do with our show, because there isn't going to be quite as much to talk about in the off season. So I think what we're going to do is this. We're going to take a week off, and then we'll come back like first week in November with kind of like a best of 2018 episode. Maybe me and Sarah will give out some fake internet awards or something. Does that sound good to you?
Ooh, yes.
Yeah, we can have some fun with this. And then obviously, we're going to have some podcast time around the first of the year when all of the fun player sponsorship stuff goes down. Sarah, I don't know if you've heard all these rumors yet.
I've heard some rumors.
Have you heard the rumors?
Yes.
I've
heard a few.
I heard that Paul McBeth is going to get sponsored by Tesla, is what I heard.
The shoe company or
Tesla,
the car company?
The shoe company?
Yep, I have minimalist sneakers by Tesla. But
nobody
I'm assuming you're talking about
Tesla
the car.
Shoes are, Sarah.
I know. They're good. Tesla. They're only $20, and they're as flimsy as a ballet
Paul
shoe.
Paul McBeth's not going to get sponsored by a $20 shoe company. No, they're going to send him to the moon, and he's going to be the first disc golfer on the moon. That's the one rumor I've heard, right? And then what else have I heard? Oh, I've heard that James Conrad is going to be sponsored by Head & Shoulders. That's the one I've heard. And then I've also heard that Dynamic Disc is going to live stream an arm wrestling match between Paige Pierce and Paige Bierkus, because there's only room for one Paige on the team.
Oh my gosh. Well,
so
funny
these
enough,
these are
Paige...
all the things that we're going to have to talk about coming
yeah.
up. Because they're totally real and totally going to happen.
Paige Bierkus is actually coming through town, and she'll be here in about 25 minutes, so I can train her up and show her some good arm wrestling techniques.
I mean, I obviously, for people out there who maybe don't maybe take things too seriously, that's not gonna happen, but I would watch a live stream of Paige Pierce and Paige Bierkus arm wrestling just to see who could win.
Yeah, even thumb war, like doing some thumb wars. That would be pretty entertaining.
Just get them some rock 'em sock 'em robots.
Yeah,
so you can win anyway. But yeah, we will, there is going to be, I think it is going to be an interesting off season. So we will keep everyone abreast of all that good stuff as things go until then. And then Sarah, why don't you give us one last plug for the PDJ Radio Challenge this month?
Yeah. So if you are doing anything that is Halloween and disc golf related together at the same time, take a picture of it, post it on Instagram, and use the hashtag PDJ Radio Challenge. I posted a picture of a pumpkin that I carved a couple of years ago. And then also I played a few holes in a Halloween costume at my tournament this past weekend.
I love it.
Until it was very difficult for me to, I would reach back and my wing of my costume, I couldn't see where I was throwing and I had to ditch it after a couple holes, but it was a photo op for sure.
We're having a hard time. My wife and I, we're having a hard time locking down our Halloween costume. We got to figure it out. So
some good,
I don't
couple,
know if it's going to be
couples
disc golf
options
related
out there.
Yeah. Oh, there always are. But, yeah, you know, we have a kid. We have to balance the appropriate versus the inappropriate. I'm going to try, though, for my PDJ Rio challenge. I'm going to see. It's probably going to take a few takes, so it could be entertaining. I'm going to see if I can, like, throw a disc, like, actually into a pumpkin and get it to stick.
Ooh.
And film it.
That would be good.
It could be dangerous.
That could be dangerous.
Don't try it at home, kids.
Yeah.
So, anyway, we will be back. So, I guess at this point, we'll probably be back after Halloween. So, we will catch up on all things Halloween-related then. And until we come back, thank you for following along with us this season. I've had a lot of fun. Sarah, have you had fun?
I've had a lot of fun, yeah.
So, thank you to everyone who's listened this year. If you're enjoying the show, please do us a favor. Like it. You know, when you see it come in your social media feed, subscribe, share with your friends, help us spread the good word of disc golf, and we'll be back in a couple weeks with the best of 2018. So for Sarah Lamberson, I'm Steve Hill. That was PDJ Radio. Have a happy, safe Halloween, and be good to each other. We will talk to you guys soon.